From the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgate. Representing KGYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, we are the Forum for the Fans, the Bleed Blue Show, the Rink Podcast with Ranger Proud. In between games, heading into the holiday next week, coming off the two losses, terrible losses in Florida versus the Lightning, versus the Panthers. But we have to look forward. We have to keep it moving on. The Rangers have a couple of days off, had some skate arounds, getting ready for the almost invincible Washington Capitals. On Wednesday night hockey, and we'll definitely discuss that. And of course, as well as all the other teams we got coming up this week, we got the Ottawa Senators on Friday. On Friday, ending out the Montreal Canadiens on Saturday, and an upcoming game Monday versus the Minnesota Wild. But the Rangers, a lot of things going on with the blue shirts. We got injuries, you got guys being sick, you got guys going coming down from Hartford, got guys coming up from Hartford. We have a lot to discuss. And as well, we will try to get around the NHL as well. I have a lot to say about that. And as well as these other circuits with the OHL, the AHL, and the KHL, so on and so forth. Ranger Proud RP. Ranger Proud on Facebook, Twitter, and of course, writer for Elite Sports New York, R. Pizzo, man. What's up, man? How's everything?
Really good, Steve. How's it going?
Nothing much, man. I mean, let's get right to it, man. The two games in Florida, man. I don't know if you know, I tweeted at you, Ranger Proud, during the game, right, well before it got really, really out of hand. I mean, it was already out of hand in the first period, but I don't know if you remember. I don't think you saw my tweet about the Rangers are going to give up 9 goals. I don't know if you saw that.
No, but I didn't. But you were there.
yeah. I didn't think it was going to get to 10. And I said, hey, RP, you want to make? I wanted to make a bet right there on social media, on Twitter, but you didn't respond, so you probably didn't see it. But Tampa Bay and Florida.
You know something? Believe it or not, that turned out to be a special teams failure. If you take away the 5 power play goals, it's a 4-2 hockey game. And it was all in between. The Rangers came out flat. Then they took some really stupid penalties, and every time they were in the box, Tampa Bay made them pay. And that's the game when David Quinn was like, these guys really have to learn how to manage emotions and animosity throughout a game, because that's what's going to happen a lot. And it was an epic fail on both those areas for the Rangers that night. If it could go wrong, it did go wrong. I don't remember the last time goalies got pulled and get put back into a game. It had a little bit of everything, and none of it was good for the Rangers. So it was one of those games when you want to just take the video and everything else and chuck it. But on the flip side of it, you hope that the players learn that, you know, sometimes games aren't going to go your way, especially in the beginning, and you got to find a way to do it. It's not always about dirty hits and a lot of lazy penalties, Steve. Those hooks and trips and those kind of penalties are lazy penalties. Guys stop moving their feet and you just use the stick. You take a hooking penalty, you take a tripping penalty, you get that little slap across the gloves and you get the slash, and that's what the Rangers were full of, those kind of calls against them. And at the end, Tampa Bay made sure that every single time they had a man advantage, you know, they found the back of the net. So score-wise, we want to forget about the game, but from learning how to deal with problems that can come up during a game and what not to do, you would hope they kind of keep that in the back of their mind a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you, man. It was ugly in that first period with the slashing penalty with Tony DeAngelo on Alex Killorn, and even the cross-checking with Brandon Lemieux on Sergachev as well. And then when Luke Shen got that, I mean, it was the long shots too. I mean, these guys were pretty much shooting from the airport and they were going in.
Yeah.
Gorkyov, it was really bad. It was all around bad that Thursday night. Then, you know, it's even in the second period with the penalties, like you said, it was just terrible penalties, just like mental lapses, like the too many men on the ice. even just things like that, setting up the power play, and they were clicking all night as far as their power play unit for the Tampa Bay Lightning. You're right, man. It was even so bad that I had to laugh. Like, I even tried to, like I said, I tried to reach out to you on social media, say, hey, man, I think it's going to get no pass. It's not going to get past nine. I was trying to make fun of it. You had to laugh from, you know, being pissed off and breaking stuff. That's, you know, that's the way I had to look at it. And, of course, Ranger fans, when irate, Rangers Twitter was on fire that night. But
it's
that was
on
one
fire.
Game. Yeah, it's always on fire, but it was really, really bad. You take that and you had to move on to the Florida game, which the Florida game, especially when you had a lead, this is a different Florida Panthers team. You already know that. We talked about this in the offseason. This is the team I thought was going to make a bigger jump because of the head coach. So things like this, and we'll talk about this later when we get around the NHL, but the Florida Panthers does not surprise me. Matter of fact, they're playing excellent hockey. But the Rangers, when they had the 3-2 lead in the second period, you know, after the Tony DeAngelo goal, who's, you know, he's a very, you know, excellent scorer, they gave up the back-to-back goals. Well, I would say back-to-back goals. They gave up the next two goals, who had Evgeny Dadonov had an excellent game. On the ice as well. He had one of them was a power play and one's an even strength. But, you know, it was hard keeping Brian Boyle and Keith Yandel and Huberto. Those guys were clicking. And the Rangers had no answers for those particular Panthers players and Mike Hoffman
no.
as well. What did you see in the game on Saturday, man? What was your thoughts on that?
I mean, it was it's the same thing, unfortunately, that's been going on. The Rangers apparently killing – got really poor really fast. You know, Hoffman, the Panthers' first goal two minutes into the game is a power play goal, and then the Rangers tie it up, and Florida scores another power play goal. And you want to know something? Power plays lead to a lot of momentum. I always say that. And you can't just keep taking these penalties. And, you know, some teams can take penalties because they have great penalty killing. So you can afford to be more aggressive, and that's also a difference too. There's aggressive penalties and there's lazy penalties. You can take aggressive penalties knowing that, hey, my PK is really good. I'm confident in it. And you sort of make it a little bit of a game plan. The flip side to that is, you know, you keep taking these hooking and these tripping penalties and cross-checking, all things that are not New York Ranger kind of penalties. And every time they do it, they're suffering. The other team is really pounding on them, and it's a huge problem right now. And of the two games in Florida, that's what I saw the most. You can't keep taking leads and then giving them power plays and they score, or you're in a tie game and you give them a power play and they take the lead against you. And it's happening a lot more often than you would like. The Rangers' first periods have not been as strong as they were earlier in the season. Now, look, it definitely hurt that Kako wasn't in both of the games. It takes away an offensive punch. It takes away what you want to do with the lines. You know, so now you were missing Kako, Zibanejad, and Stahl. And people can say what they want. You got three starters in the lineup who, for the most part, one way or another, contribute to your team, not there. And there's only so much depth that you can have. I personally think it's the lineup is not nearly as strong when you have McCaig, Haley, Smith, and I'm not knocking Lemieux, but those four guys does not create the powerhouse that you're looking for. Now, Lemieux's not really in that category. When he's playing himself on his regular line, he's great. When you look at the whole lineup, four of those guys aren't your goal scorers that you're looking for. And it's Smith, McCaig, and Haley, that just kills your whole offensive flow. And that's what the Rangers had to go with over the weekend. That, you know, 2 years ago, the fourth line was such an important team, an important component of the team. And now it seems like, I don't know if Quinn isn't interested in it. I know he wasn't playing the third line a lot the fourth line a lot in games recently. So I'm not quite sure where they're going with it. That also leads to the whole Elias Anderson nightmare, which we can talk about later, which is beating a dead horse. But in these two games, that's been a big part of the problem. The penalty killing has been horrible. They haven't been doing much on the power play. that five-on-five hockey really got hurt in the Tampa Bay game. In the Florida game, it wasn't as bad, obviously, based on the score, but they just seem to be missing something. I don't know. I think the hard part, Steve, of having such a young team is you're going to have these up-and-down kind of scenarios, and I think the coaching staff need to try to prevent a 5-6 and 7-game losing streak. You know what I'm saying? Because you're going to have these games when things aren't going your way. And the only problem right now is until they go through it, there's nothing to compare it to. So these are the growing pains of playing 7 kids who are 21 and under, or 8 if you include Gorgiev, 23 and under. It's really going to be the ups and downs. And you have to rely on the coaching staff. But let's remember, our coach is only in his second year. So he's learning this. It's totally different than the losing streak in college. So there's a lot going on that sometimes I think everyone sort of forgets about. You know, Quinn's only in his second full season. He's learning as he goes, too, how to push the right buttons, what he wants. You know, he seems to say the right things at the press conferences. And, you know, when you see beat reporters talking about what he's doing at practice and all. But I'm sure there's a lot of ups and downs within himself of what he's doing out there, trying to get a feel for it, trying not to let the whole season get away early. You know, and people can criticize, well, he's supposed to be there to teach the kids. But this is New York City. You got to teach the kids. You got to grow with them. But people also are expecting wins. And you can see how Rangers, the Twitter world is right now. It's crazy right now. It really is. It's to a point of almost being ridiculous. This is a hockey team. You cannot criticize and second-guess every single move the coaching staff makes. Now, granted, they're not paying attention to it, but as a writer and as a blogger, after a while, it's like, enough already. This is what hockey is. I mean, it's just how I feel about it. I mean, the stuff that's been going on with Leah Sanderson, do I feel horrible for the kid that it happened to him? Yes, but it's not. They make it like it's the first time it's ever happened. Sometimes a player and a coach just don't click. And I've noticed that for the year and a half now with Anderson. He was down a lot last season with Hartford. We understand that. This year he came up and he wasn't coming off the fourth line. AV said he needed to work on that. AV, see, I'm already talking about Alain Vigneault. David Quinn said he needed to work a lot with problems he saw in his game, which is one of the reasons why he got sent down. Personally, I don't think he fits anywhere in the lineup right now as a center, especially when Zibanejad returns. And if the Rangers aren't comfortable putting him on the wing, where is he going to go? And then the other thing, is this comparison to him and Brett Howden. I don't understand it. Howden just playing better hockey. He's a better skater. He's more aggressive. He's smarter without the puck, and he's taking advantage of his opportunities. That's just how I see it. So it's a lot going on at one time. Maybe now things will settle down. A decision has been made with Anderson, and it'll be a lot better once we get Zibanejad back in the lineup and playing the way he was. But now I just read that he's definitely out the next 2 games after tomorrow too, which means he's not returning.
Oh, he's out. He's out for the Ottawa game too. Okay, I didn't know
he's
that.
He's out for the Ottawa game. I read somewhere before Quinn said he's going to be out for the Ottawa game too. So I don't.
Oh man.
You know, it's a weird thing. Because no one knows what the injury is. Everyone's swearing it's not a concussion. He did skate in a red jersey today with the team, which is good because he hasn't done that in a while. But he's still in a non-contact jersey. So he must have done something with his neck, maybe with his shoulder on that hit. It's really been a great kept secret because no one has any idea. And they've been asked about it. The Rangers just won't let anyone know other than it's an upper body injury. But they really are missing his leadership. I can tell you that. You know, he's just that guy that. It's just a weird injury. But I think that he must be getting closer for them to make the move they made sending Anderson down. It's also interesting, Steve, that they waived Haley. He cleared waivers, but they kept him up. So a little weird. Something that normally you don't see, but I also believe the Rangers are going to have Kako can play tomorrow night, and they would need him. So it's kind of a wait and see. it looks like Kako's going to be able to play in the game tomorrow night, though they said he's still pretty weak from the beating he took having us in the pool over the weekend.
Right.
So there's a lot of weird things going on with the team. But somewhere along the line, it's not just about one player. You know, it's about 23 players or 22 other players and the team and all. So everyone's got to realize that there's more to it. Sometimes it just doesn't work out with a player. You've seen it in other sports, Steve. I've seen it in sports. You could love a guy, but it just may not be the fit that everyone thought it would be. And I'm not saying that for surely is with Anderson, but right now that's where they're at. This is where they're at. And, you know, to an extent, them sending him down might just relieve a little bit of all the craziness that's going on all around them. And with team focus on these guys, on a whole unit, and not just one player not getting ice time and the constant questions about him. And, you know, obviously there's something going on that we're not going to know about. And that's a decision that they made.
Right. To your point in the Florida game, it's really, you know, I mean, we got to, I guess we could be critical on our own team. Yeah, we're missing players. Yeah, we're missing bodies. But even with the limited lineups as far as guys probably going up in the lines and getting more time on the ice, I mean, the Florida and the teams that we were playing, and we said this last week, so this is kind of, I mean, the way the Tampa Bay game was disgusting as far as the way they scored at will, because
mm-hmm.
I know Tampa Bay has scoring in them, but it should never get out of hand like that. So that was just one of those, like you said, just take the tape and burn it. But the Florida game, I kind of seen that kind of coming. So that's why when we were on this podcast last week, we had Scott with us. That's why I was kind of like, okay, you know what, Florida, these are two – usually when we play those two Florida teams on the road, you know, every time we go down the back-to-back in Florida, it's usually one of them is going to be the cakewalk and the other game is going to be a tough one. And the last several years, it's usually the Tampa Bay game that's been the tough one. The Florida game was usually the one you're like, all right, well, this is where we get our stats up. This is where – We're gonna play better hockey, but we mm-hmm. even said it even in the off season. This was a different Florida team. When we saw that coach goes to that team, I said they're going to automatically they're going to be a better team. And part of it is, you know, it's really, you know, I hate to say it, but you know, Pavel Buchnevich is a decent player, cool blue shirt guy. Ryan Lindgren, a nice young defenseman. But those guys, I mean, they can't handle Jonathan Huberdeau. Huberdeau is a monster. And unless he's got the right coach, I mean, a lot of those players on that team gets the right coach, they're going to be a playoff team. And that's not to say that's an excuse mm-hmm. for the Rangers, but I know our personnel, and I know a little bit about their personnel. I know they have a lot better potential on their top line than probably half the Eastern Conference. So that was a load
absolutely.
In itself, especially, like you said, without Kako, who was playing well. You know, I hate to say that, but, you know,
sure.
you know, he was playing well, and the sickness, the flu that came up, that was a big loss as far as scoring. And, of course, without already playing with a Zibanejad, I mean, realistically, I have to be realistic. Like, we were playing with a tall deck right there. I mean, that's just
yeah.
the way I saw it, man. So
I agree.
I that's why the objectiveness in me is like, hey, you know what? I mean, even if we win some of these games, that's house money, honestly, because we're not playing with Amika Zibanejad. And with some of these, like the Tampa Bay win, I mean, that's a bonus, man. And that,
sure.
that goes to a long way. Now, you said your points as far as Zibanejad. I mean, that we talked about this in the offseason because I remember I asked you the question. And then part of my reason why I thought his points may go down because of his availability. Because Zibanejad, you know, he could
so
be injured.
You jinxed him,
like,
in other words.
I'm just saying, man. I don't,
we could blame
you. Know,
you
I
got no problem blaming you. Actually, Steve, just not to cut you off, I believe that Zibanejad isn't playing this week, Quinn said. So he's not playing Friday against Ottawa.
Saturday, too?
And they don't think he's playing Saturday in Montreal. I was just trying I was just trying to find the quote that I read. He said, Zibanejad likely won't play this week, but he's getting closer. That was his quote Vince Mergliano this afternoon that he wrote down on his article about the whole Zabala cut thing. So that's tomorrow.
We'll
so that's three
well,
more games. So it's
well, let him get 100%.
You know something? That'll be 10. Tomorrow is the 10th game. That'll be 12 games. That's getting way worse than anybody thought. It's going to take him a couple of games to get back into it. I mean, he's been out a month.
Right.
It's like starting training camp all over when you get knocked out this early. So,
That's right.
You know, when he does return, it isn't going to be this, oh, here he comes kind of deal. It's going to take him a little bit of time to get reacclimated with everyone. I mean, the Rangers played 3 and 4 nights at that point because they're going to play Friday against Ottawa, Saturday in Montreal, and then Monday home against Minnesota.
Right.
That is a it's probably – and then they play Wednesday. The Rangers got a real tough schedule here right now game-wise. Somewhere, I mean, they're going to have
right.
to insert him and then just see, you know, and get him going. But I would think they wouldn't bring him back sooner than Monday, I got to tell you.
Well, that's
so
going to be a tough stretch,
and
that's something
we're
going to have to talk about next Tuesday when we get to that point because we'll have to see how
sure.
they would have done
and
versus those two Canadian teams in Minnesota. Huh?
He won't even be able to, if since he's not traveling with the team, he's not going to get any practice in. So it's going to be hard to get him back into a game if he hasn't practiced first. And if they're playing
that's true.
Friday, Saturday, and then Monday, and Sunday's an off day, he might not play until Wednesday because he probably won't be able to do a full. He's going to have to at least have one practice with contact before he gets in the game. That would be Tuesday. So now you're looking at a week from tomorrow before he's back. All of a sudden, this little injury is piling up to 13, 14 games missed. That's a large chunk of the season.
Yeah, I mean, and it goes back to what we said in the offseason, RP. I mean, come on. It's like the Rangers, if they were going to make the playoffs, if they were going to be one of those wild card teams, everything would have to break right just to
yep.
barely get in. So, you know, you aim it for that 97-point threshold, 98 points. And you don't have your top gun. You don't, arguably don't have your best player, you know, and Mika Zibanejad as far as your center. That's asking a lot, man. That is asking
uh-huh.
a lot of this team just to compete in this competitive NHL, East or West Conference.
Sure.
Either or, doesn't matter. Both there's loads
sure.
in both conferences this year. So we'll have to see. Now, Arpin, let's get to Tim Gettinger because we talked about, you know, Elias Anderson going to Hartford, but at least we're trying to get some reinforcement with some a big body on that fourth line, you know, especially like you said, as far as the penalty kill has been, you know, in Tampa, it was put it on the back of a milk carton. It was not, it's lost, man, it's gone. What are we getting
yeah.
out of Tim Gettinger? I mean, what he had a decent showing in Hartford. Actually, I'll even get into that later because I even watched the game in their loss on Saturday. It was a bad week for the New York teams on Saturday, whether
yeah.
the minor league or the varsity teams. But anyway, Tim Gettinger was
yeah, but
a big body. No, he's kind of a guy who can score a little bit, but has more of a physicality and the
yeah.
penalty kill. But what other things can you tell us about Tim Gettinger, man?
You know, he's another young kid. He's 21 years old. He's only played 17 games mm-hmm. this year. He played 4 games with the Rangers last year. So he's been in the NHL, which is good. He's not a big goal scorer. He's a big hitter. He's an aggressive mm-hmm. player. So he's that good, solid fourth-line player. A little bit of surprise that he was the call-up and not Abu Nieves, even though Nieves is a center. He also plays wing. So that was a little surprising. I would have thought, especially the way things are going with the Rangers, he might have wanted to brought up a little bit more play with more experience, especially because they're not quite sure how long this player is going to stay up or what's going to happen going forward once Mika returns. But for now, the Rangers are going to play him tomorrow night on the fourth line, it looks like, with kind of hard to tell. It looks like it's going to be McCaig in the middle and Smith on the other side on that fourth line.
Right.
Now that they know for sure Mika isn't coming back tomorrow. So, you know, when Zibanejad returns, I'm assuming Howden will be the one that drops to the fourth line, only because Strome is playing so well and Hedl's been on fire since he's come up. Zibanejad, so who else would go to the fourth line in that instance? You would think it would be Brett Howden that would drop down. That's yet to be seen. They did announce today that David Quinn, I should say, that when Zibanejad does return, he wants to keep Strom at center. And I would also think that means that he would keep him with Panarin, because even though Zibanejad was with Panarin before, Strom's playing really well with him. So in the meantime, Gettinger right now is going to keep his opportunity for a while on the wing with whomever is centering with him. And I think the Rangers from him are just looking that the fourth line's turning out to be more of a, let's give the other three lines a little bit of break in a defensive role kind of position. I mean, that's how Quinn's used it so far. And that's what Gettinger's responsibility is going to be. It's going to be aggressive, keep the puck out of our own end, not make any stupid plays. And obviously being that 8-9 minute range of game to give him some breathing room for the other three lines. More or less what we've seen when Anderson was on the line and when Haley was playing there. So I don't think there's going to be that much, not much, I should say, of a difference. Like you said, he's not really a huge goal scorer. He has 81 career games in the American Hockey League, and he's had 18 goals and 15 assists for 33 points, which isn't horrible, but it's not. Don't think this guy's going to be coming down the line in the lamp, because that's just not what his role is.
No, his role, like you said, is bring the physicality to it. I mean, he's a big boy.
Yeah.
He's a guy. We need enforcement down there. We need guys in front of the goalie, whoever's in that, to play at the circles and keep guys away, be physical, especially on the PK, too. You might see him on the second PK unit as well. I mean, if you ever was to make a case, you said between him and Buñuel Nieves could play both forward and center, but probably played more center than anything. We don't need more centers. So it's probably more of a fit as far as Elias Anderson going back to Hartford and get more time on the ice, and he could build his confidence back up, and we'll see where he is later down the line, where we need actually more of a wing guy who could play more, you know, bring more defense. We need, that's what we need.
Well,
so, I mean, that's one
of
the cases I can make.
I would think that Anderson's going to be seeing a lot of time on the wing, too. I don't think the Rangers, this has been the question for like the last year and a half between him and Hedl, Anderson and Hedl. I don't think there's a center position really there for Anderson. I think he would be a lot more productive
and
get more playing time on the wing. Mm-hmm. The way the team is designed right now, you know, if you brought Anderson up with a healthy Zibanejad, that's five centers right now. Who would you move to wing right now? It would be Anderson. You got Howden is playing well. Hedl, we didn't name them all. They're all playing. Anderson would be the fifth center on the team right now. Whether people like that or not, that's just the reality of the situation. I thought they were going to put Anderson on the wing earlier. I didn't think they were going to send him down, to be honest. I thought they were going to move him to the wing, who put whatever you're going to do, McHague or whomever, at center on the fourth line and take it from there. But obviously they want him, from what David Quinn said, was there was a consistency issue with the way he played. He thought there was definitely a drop in Anderson's play, which comes with a lot of lack of confidence because of getting a lack of playing time. But that's just how it is when you're on the fourth line, unfortunately. He couldn't earn more ice time on a different line. Quinn didn't see the reason to give him that responsibility. And then you kind of get stuck chasing your tail. And that's what happened. So maybe, hopefully, Anderson could be as beneficial in Hartford as Hedl was. And figure out what he needs to do to get back up to the club, because he is a good hockey player. He can score goals, but lately, or with the Rangers anyway, it just hasn't happened the way he had hoped.
Right. That is right on that. Let me see. The Florida games. So these upcoming games, we got a tough one versus the Capitals. I mean, that's probably the best
Always.
Team right now. We're familiar with them, so we don't have to run down that road with the Capitals. They won tonight, I think, or was it last night versus the Ducks? That was a weird game. So we'll just have to see how we play against them. And I mean, they're a veteran, former Stanley Cup champion team with a lot of this core still there. So we'll see how that goes. We talked about Trouba last week a little bit as far as he's kind of been under the radar because of the young guys playing well. As far as any progress with Trouba, the last couple of games, you want to see him improve on. What's your thoughts on Jacob Trouba?
He looked like he lost a little bit of his confidence. I'm not talking about offensively because he scores a lot of points, but that's, from his own words, isn't his forte. It's his defense. Seems to be making him running around a little bit more often than not. He's losing his check in front of the net a lot. Simple things, but it's sort of like I think he's trying to carry the weight a little bit more to help the team out, and the fundamentals are kind of slipping by a little bit. He needs to do what he was doing when he first started playing this season, those first four games. Solid defense for him always seems to generate solid offense. And he just needs to go back to playing simple hockey. Don't worry about carrying a load. Just do it a shift at a time. Him and Shea seem to have really good times, and then like the other day when Shea was tripping over his own feet. And not that Trouba has been playing that horrible. He hasn't, but he played so much better the first four or five games of the season. And I think that's what a lot of the plays, though. I think when you get to the kind of hockey the Rangers are playing right now, when a lot of things are going wrong all at one time, the better players are trying to overcompensate what they can do, and that causes them to make their own mistakes. So he just needs to go back to playing his style of hockey, and he's going to be fine.
All right. You know, I thought what I do see is him not involved more on the first power play unit. You see more Adam Fox. Now, Adam Fox has been spectacular when it comes to the guys. But we're paying Trouba all that money. I mean, at this point, do you see the business politics undercutting the production coming from another guy who should be leading the power play unit? Or how do you look at that as far as Trouba getting his confidence back? We need his production because I remember this. I remember this conversation vividly with Rangers fans. Remember, I wasn't too high on the Trouba acquisition, and I got killed for it from Rangers fans. I got killed for it because I thought a little bit, as far as last year in particular, Trouba front ran with the Winnipeg Jets. I thought he played with a better unit and that gave him a lot more opportunities he wasn't accounted for. Now, when he's the focal point, he's really going to have to step up. And up until this point, it's kind of almost – it's going worse than I thought it would be. So as far as Trouba, now I didn't even think this was even going to be on the special teams level. I mean, as far as him being productive as a Ranger scoring points, I mean, that's exactly what we got him for, even at the defensive position. It's not playing out well, and I thought it was going to be bad, but not this bad. What could we get him to get going, man, especially with all these injuries, you know, pounding, like you said, with Zibanejad and everybody else? What's your thoughts as far as we needed his leadership?
Well, I think they have his leadership. I think what everyone has to understand is he's not a goal scorer. He's not a goal-scoring defenseman. I mean, last year he only had 8 goals scored. The year before that he played in 55 games. He had 3 goals scored. He's a playmaker. You know, he had 42 assists last year in 82 games. He's not the offensive powerhouse everyone thinks he was or he was with Winnipeg. That isn't his game. He sets other guys up. In Winnipeg, he had a lot of guys that could finish and score goals. So remember, he came to a Ranger team that wasn't scoring a lot of goals last year. Now he comes to this team, and yes, Panarin's been playing really well, and Strome's been playing really well, but his game is defense. You know, when you look at his totals, when you look at his numbers broken down overall, he's a playmaking kind of a defenseman. He sets up either deflections, the quick passes to guys who can finish. And you and I know, Steve, the Rangers haven't had that over the years. This year it's been a little different with Panarin and with Strome and when Zibanejad was playing before he got injured and all. But I don't think, or I should say, everyone who's thinking this guy's going to be a Brian Leetch or is out of their mind. It's not the same defenseman. Now flip over to the other guy that you said. Adam Fox is a different story. Adam Fox has much more offensive skill, I think, than a Trouba does. And yes, Fox is only a rookie, but he plays with a lot of poise. He has a really good shot. He's not nervous with the puck, and that's why you're seeing him on the first power play unit. Also understand, with the Rangers, they're going with 4 forwards and 1 defenseman. not the traditional three forwards and two defensemen on the power play. So a guy like Trouba isn't seeing as much power play time with the Rangers as he did with Winnipeg because of that design. And a guy like Shea isn't seeing any power play time because Trouba's getting the second power play unit if he's not getting the first when Fox is there. So the whole sequence is different than when Trouba was in Winnipeg. So right off the bat there, his point production is going to be down a little bit because he's not on the ice to set up guys on power plays. But the flip side to it is, I don't care who's on the blue line, as long as the power play is productive. You can't let what a guy is making dictate who's on the first power play unit and who's on the second power play unit. Quinn is looking for the best five guys to get the best scoring chances. Right now, Fox on the point has really been going well when the special teams has been going well, which is a whole other, you know, another nightmare right now with the way the whole team is playing. But I don't care if it's Fox on a point, if it's Shea, if it's Kreider, if it's Panarin. We've seen all of that at one time or another. When the power play is productive, those five guys are going to keep getting a shot at it. So, and that's one thing I like with Quinn. He doesn't let a guy's salary or prestige or whatever. He's putting the best guys on the ice in what he thinks is the best opportunity to be productive.
All right. Well, you know, the playmaking part is definitely the key of all this as far as his game offensively. And as far as goals, that's one thing. You're right. But the points, as far as the assist aspect, as far as playmaking, I mean, that's the part where we did not think that this crop, and especially with, you know, Zibanejad out, the last several games, we don't have that punch like the Winnipeg Jets got. And I think Trouba definitely benefited from that. So that was my whole point with Rangers fans about that. Let's move on to some more positive things. So we'll get around to the NHL. If we want to bring up some Rangers stuff too. You know, it's really good to see one of our own make the Hall of Fame RP. Sergei Zubov, a guy, when I first started watching hockey back in 90, that's when he was drafted around that time. My introduction into the sport back in 1990-ish, 89, 90, he was deep into the draft, became a Stanley Cup champion, and he was a scoring machine with the Rangers. We already know about the legendary 94 team. It really sucked that when he got traded. I remember with the Penguins, we were Oak Samuelson back from that trade. And he ended up in Dallas somehow. I don't know what happened with Pittsburgh. But anyway, he ended up down in Dallas, got another Stanley Cup. But Sergei Zubov, man, what's your thought? And especially at that time with the Russians getting Stanley Cups, their names on the Stanley Cups, and he was one of the first guys to get that. And he had a nice long career, man. What your thoughts on Sergei Zubov, a Hockey Hall of Famer with the Blue Shirts?
It was great. You know, I remember as a Ranger winning the Stanley Cup in 94, but he played 12 years with Dallas and won another Stanley Cup with them. He was a great playmaker. He led the Rangers in scoring one season. I mean, you couldn't – when he was on the ice, it was really fun to watch. The year that the Rangers won the Cup, he had 89 points, 12 goals, and 77 assists that season.
Right.
And he was just fun to watch. He was fluent. He worked hard. He really enjoyed the game. And I tell you, like you said, it stunk when they made that trade. At the time, it was a big trade for the Rangers because they picked up three big players. But it didn't really work out with him in there in Pittsburgh. And then he had the great career over in Dallas. And they love him out there. They're retiring his number out there. As we said, he made the Hall of Fame. So I was happy to see a Ranger, one of the first four Russians ever to win the Stanley Cup the year when the Rangers won with Tim Nemchinov, Kovalev, Kopitev. So it was a great time when he was a New York Ranger. So happy for him. He deserved it. It was good to see him put the jacket on.
Right on, man. Talking about the around the NHL as far as the other teams, man, now we're starting to see a little bit of a pitch, a lot of development as far as who's breaking out of the pack, who's started off cold, is coming back to the pack, so on and so forth. Starting with the East, last time we were here, This was on the post game. We have Scott, but the Islanders were on a tear. Now, right before this podcast, right before we started this episode, RP, I literally watched them steal a game from the Pittsburgh Penguins on the road.
Yep.
The Islanders. Uh-huh. They got the that third period goal, and they got the one in overtime. You know, what's up with this Islanders team, man? I mean, even as far as they've been on fire. Did you think this was going to be happening again another year? I mean, I know they kind of shocked a lot of us last year, whether they were Islanders or not Islanders fans or not, or Rangers fans or fans of the NHL. But them still doing it like this, does this shock you? Or what's your thoughts with the Fish Sticks?
No, it does surprise me. They're playing really well. I mean, 15-3-1 on the season. They are playing really well. They've gotten points now in 12 or 14 straight games. I forgot what the number was. They are playing great hockey, and they're really giving – they're battling the Penguins well, but the Penguins have having their ups and downs. But you can't take nothing away from the 9-0-1 in the last 10 games. They're just doing everything right. The puck is going their way. I mean, they were down 2-0 after the first tonight and battle back and win it in overtime. I mean, there's not much more you can say. It's – you know, they played 19 games and only lost 3 times, so they're definitely doing something right. They're right up there with the Penguins. With the Capitals. They're only 5 points behind them, but the Capitals have 4 games played, 4 games more than the Islanders right now. So they're battling with the top teams right now. You just got to see how it shakes out. I mean, they're having a fun season. they're not getting noticed much in New York, I got to tell you, but they are getting the job done.
Right. The only team, well, you know, RP, I thought this division, we'll start with us first, the Metro, I think is going at kind of what I thought it would be. If I had to map out who's going to be first to last, this is pretty much the order, except I thought Philadelphia was kind of more closer to maybe under us, a little bit. But it does not surprise me that they've been playing well. Philadelphia, the Flyers, we talked about the same guys that they had, the same cast for the most part, for Konechny and Sean Couturier, and you got Claude Giroux. And then you add on Kevin Hayes with his big contract, and it's just terrible. It's 7 points through 20 games. That's a ripoff of a contract. That was a heist. But AV, for the most part, has got those guys playing well. They kind of stumbled, though. They lost 4 in a row. They lost. They went on that West Coast trip. They were in Canada, when they go to Vancouver, Calgary. What was the other team? I think it was Dallas. They lost at Dallas at home, and I think it was Edmonton was the other team. They're currently on that. They're on a losing streak right now. They lost to the Islanders the other night, the Senators, the Washington Capitals. But they're pretty much in the middle of the pack. So out of this division, that's maybe the only thing I say. I know that's they're doing better than I thought they would, but they kind of stumbled as of late. But they've been playing well. But everybody else, as far as within our division, is kind of where I thought they would be. You know, as far as placement, Columbus is where they are, where I thought the Devils, us. Especially us with the injuries, and if you want to add in the injury factor, Capitals at the sure. top of the heap. You know, any surprises with you with the Metro? What's your thoughts?
I didn't think Pittsburgh would be struggling as much as they are. The power play's been really bad. They're going to be without Crosby for another 5.5 or 6 weeks. They're not playing good hockey at all. I thought they would have been a little bit better. Columbus seems to be holding their own, but like you said, the division is kind of broken down into 3 sections. You have the Capitals and the Islanders, and then you have Carolina, Pittsburgh, and Philly all right next to each other, and then you have Columbus, us, and the Devils. So it's broken down into thirds almost. Give it 3 different kind of teams. You know, the Caps and the Islanders right now are really far beyond the best 2 teams in the Metro. It'll be interesting as it gets closer towards the second half of the season when the Metro division really gets tight playoff-wise and all. But I still think you got to keep an eye out. Carolina's playing from pretty good hockey. You know, the teams that are over 500, Carolina, Pittsburgh, even Philadelphia, you know, Philly's in fifth place with 24 points, but Carolina's right there in third place, and they only have one more point than the Flyers. So however it's happening with Philly, like you were saying, right now they're ahead of the game the way they're playing. The Blue Jackets, the Rangers, and the Devils are bringing up the rear, and I don't know. I've said it all along. I just don't think the Rangers are a playoff team. And the way they're playing now, they're kind of proving that. Though it's still early. They played 18th game. You got almost a quarter of the season out of the way, and they've only got 8 wins and 18 points. I don't see them getting near the 95-point plateau the way they're playing right now. The Devils are really struggling all over the place. They lost to the Bruins tonight. Excuse me.
Oh, yeah.
They're, you know, Columbus, you know, at 8-8, most people are surprised about because, you know, they lost Panarin, they lost Bobrovsky, didn't have that many improvements in the offseason. But Tortorella's got them playing 500 hockey right now, which isn't crazy, which is good, but the way the playoffs are laid out, these bottom teams are really going to really struggle to make a dent in it anyway, you look at it.
Right. But that's another thing as far as Bobrovsky every day. He had one hell of a night versus us. And pretty much a good season, which has helped that team in the Panthers. And speaking of that division, I told you in the all season, right before the start of the season, I thought Boston was they're the best team in the East. I think.
Yes.
When it's all said and done. But I'm really shocked that the Lightning, I didn't think they were going to have a slow start like this. I mean, some of the guys have gone and missing pieces, and they still have the score punch, but did you expect them to be six in the division, or what even about the Toronto Maple Leafs? I think the Maple Leafs was the team you picked for the Atlantic.
Yeah,
Montreal kind of surprises me a little bit. The Canadiens kind of surprised me, but I know they were a good team because they got, in my opinion, top to bottom, they had the best balance in the all four lines. They had the best balance. Remember, I said they are the most interchangeable team in the league. But I didn't, they play hard every night, man. You play the Canadiens, you got to bring it. Because they have the four lines they don't have a superstar, but they have balance. What's your thoughts as far as Tampa Bay and Toronto in particular in the Atlantic? Or if you want to even chime in on Buffalo as well, or Florida.
The only thing with Tampa Bay is because they traveled to Sweden and all, they've only played 17 games. Everybody else has played 21 or 23 games. They're not near the Bruins, but most teams aren't near the Bruins. So as bad as Tampa Bay is playing, they're really not out of it. When I say out of it, I mean they might be in trouble. They're 9-6 with 20 points in 17 games played. They're going to make the playoffs. I don't see it not happening. I'm more concerned with Toronto than I am with Tampa Bay.
Why is that?
Toronto, we don't know what's going on with Toronto. Why are they playing so badly? Yeah, they lost Mitch Marner, and they had Tavares out for a while with the broken finger. But they're just not playing good hockey. Their goaltending's struggling. They've had a lot of injuries back and forth. Babcock's name has been mentioned multiple times as being on the hot seat. There's a lot going on in Toronto. They just, they're playing fair at home, but their road hockey is just horrible. They're 3-6. They're a better team than that normally on the road. In 9 games, they only have 3 wins on the road. That's why they're sitting where they're sitting right now. So that's something they're definitely going to have to improve on. They are surprising. Florida, it's been playing well, as you said. Buffalo has been up and down, but, at 10-8, 23 points, they're right in the thick of it in the Atlantic Division. Eichel's had a really good start to the season. They've been playing some good hockey. You never think of Buffalo and say, oh, here comes the Sabres, let's watch out. But they're playing better over the last couple of seasons. They really have, and I think this year might be the year when they really can cause trouble to some other teams, especially if a team like Toronto continues to struggle. the Sabres are right behind Montreal right now. They're only 3 points behind them. So they're keeping everything within reach. And, yes, it's only the end of November, but, you know, things happen quick in hockey. Once January comes around, things get really tight. The playoffs are only a couple of months away. Every point counts. So these teams are really battling now. And Buffalo's playing really well. So, like you said, Montreal's been playing above than what we thought, but they always play hard. So that's a division other than Ottawa and Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Ottawa's just a point behind Tampa Bay, I'm still convinced Tampa Bay is going to start putting a lot of wins together like they always do. And we saw they lit up the Rangers the other night. They have the scoring power when it all comes together. That's going to be a real tight division. You know, you could see both wild cards possibly coming out of the Atlantic, because I think that division is going to be better than a Metro with regards to a points race. I think in the Metro division, you're probably going to have you're definitely going to have Columbus, New York, and New Jersey on the outside looking in. Philadelphia's playing fairly well now. Will they keep that up? I don't know.
So
you know, when you go to the Atlantic, Boston's playing well, Florida's playing well, Montreal's playing well, Buffalo's doing good. Toronto and Tampa Bay are the teams that everyone thought was going to be up there. I still believe Tampa Bay will be. Toronto's got the team to turn it around. They just have to turn the switch on already. And then they have Ottawa and Detroit, which is pretty much not going to happen. So right now where things stand, there are no surprises. Like you said, well, you thought the teams would be, we thought Toronto might be a little bit higher in the standings. I thought Buffalo might have been a little bit lower in the standings. So that's going to play itself out. It's going to be a great second half of the season once they get to it. But I'm convinced that Tampa Bay is going to turn it on again and not put any heat on Boston. I don't think anyone's going to put much heat on Boston. But
are you surprised that the Panthers are in second place at this point right now, the Florida Panthers?
No. Because Florida wasn't a bad team last year. Bobrovsky's a huge, huge jump up in points and all. I mean, they're just playing really good hockey right now. You know, I'm a big Quinville fan, so it was only a matter of time before we put that together. You know, 11-5 is a little bit over where I thought they would be. I'm not going to lie to you. But I'm not surprised by it. I mean, we've seen them twice already this season. I think the Rangers are playing them or once, whatever it was. I've seen them on television a couple of times. They got a lot going for them. They got a lot of goal scoring. They're setting themselves up prime for a playoff spot for sure. Maybe get a little bit deep into the playoffs this year. So they haven't really that's not really the surprising. For me, the surprise in that division is Toronto.
Yeah, I agree. To your point, as far as Tampa Bay, as far as lack of games, that's a good point. But Toronto, that is the shocker in that division. I agree with that. Now, as far as the Central, you know, my dark horse team is coming along, RP. My dark horse team is climbing in the standings. Kind of, you know, they started off slow, and that's the Dallas Stars. That's the team I said if it wasn't going to be the Vegas Golden Knights coming out the West, I said my dark horse is the Dallas Stars to come out the West. And they started off real, real slow, man. I mean, I was like, man, this was a terrible prediction. Don't come to Steve Azul for any hockey sleepers. But I mean, to start the season, man, they had a terrible October RP. I mean, I know they had played some tough guys. I mean, tough teams. I mean, they lost to the Bruins at home, and they lost to the Blues on the road, and they lost to Detroit and Calgary, and of course the Capitals, the Sabres, and the Avalanche. They lost to those teams. You know, Pittsburgh. They lost to those teams. But since October, RP, they've only had one loss. Then they came right back into the what we saw as last year, the most competitive division in the Central. You know, St. Louis, the defending champs, are leading the way. I thought maybe they would have had a little bit of a Stanley Cup hangover, but they said up until this point they're pretty much not going to have that hangover. But the surprise, RP, the Predators, man. I thought the Predators was going to be at the top of the heap. I mean, that's what we've come to expect the last 3 years with the Predators. I don't know what's going on with that team. What's your thoughts on any of those teams in the Central? But for the most part, everything is – everybody's where I thought they would be except the Predators. I thought the Predators would be at least two or three – no lower than three at this point.
Well, you know something? They still have 21 points, the Predators. They're not playing great hockey, but you turn it around a little bit, and they're not that far behind. St. Louis is 12 wins. They have 29 points. That's only 7 more. Excuse me, 21. That's 8 more. That's only 4 more wins than where Nashville is. They can easily turn this around and start to move up. The problem is everyone ahead of them is playing pretty well. Chicago's right there with 22 points. You just spoke about Dallas. Colorado, even though Linus Hager's out, they're playing great, 12-6. The Jets have been playing pretty consistent hockey over the last couple of seasons, and they're up there at 13-8. So that is a pretty good division outside of the Minnesota Wild. Your sixth-place team is 21 points. Your first-place team is 29. You're plus-minus 4 with the win column there. That's going to be a tight division all season. So I think Nashville can turn it around. They have a lot of good hockey players. They just, like you said, they just had a horrible start. I mean, the last 10 games, they're 3-5-2. Nothing impressive to talk about. They've lost 3 in a row. So you got to keep an eye on them because as quick as they can move up, they can really start to fall down.
Yeah, especially the Stars, because I really watched them play the last couple of weeks. This past Saturday, they were in Edmonton. They had a nice overtime win in Edmonton, and I think, yeah, it was Jamie Benn who got the overtime goal to win that game. And he hasn't really gotten it going. That's the scary thing about that team. He's been real quiet, but the Joe Pavelski experiment has been pretty good thus far. He's fitting right in with that team. As far as everybody else, they're all where I think they are. Not Edmonton. Well, I guess we could talk about the Pacific, but Edmonton, like we said last week, I thought they should have been doing this 2 years ago. You know, they are a talented team. They have a talented first line. We already know that they have scoring punch. They're playing well, finally. But what I thought was surprising is behind them is Arizona and Vancouver. Now, I even watched a couple of Arizona games. I even watched the Arizona game last night versus the Kings just to really get a good look at them, RP. The Coyotes, they played well. They've been playing well too, man. Connor Garland, he's scoring like crazy. He's got like about 10, 11 goals on the season. Schmaltz and Clayton Keller, they've been putting a lot of playmaking out there on the ice, and they got the veterans like – Phil Kessel's chipping in, man. But here's my thing, man. And I talked to a lot of NHL fans, and whether they're casual or not or whatever, Elias Pettersson is probably the most underrated top 10 player in sports. I mean, you put it against the basketball, the football, whatever you want to put. Nobody knows who he is, but he's a very, very good player with the Canucks, man. And we saw him against us, remember it was several Sundays ago versus the Rangers. JT Miller is playing very well. Brock Bosier is playing very, very well for the Canucks, man. The Canucks are they're kind of surprising me. They're surprising me. But I think Vegas is going to overtake them. Anaheim started off hot. They cooled off. But San Jose is really – that's kind of the shocker. But like you said, they're almost like the Nashville – they're in a similar situation as Nashville, you know, as far as their points. What's your thoughts on the Pacific?
You know, like you said, San Jose just can't seem to get some consistency going. They've been struggling. The Kings, I'm sort of surprised how bad they're playing, and I'm not. There's a lot going on over there. Quick spin in trade talks. Dartrey has been playing well. Kovalchuk was told not to come back. There's a lot going on in Los Angeles, so I'm not surprised that they're sitting at 8-12. Their plays, as a result of all these problems that are going on over there, so it was bound to happen. Time caught up with the Kings, with goaltending, with some of these players that have been there for a while. So they're probably definitely going to be staying at the bottom of the pack. They're at 8-12 right now. Like you said, Anaheim's playing 500 hockey. The Flames are playing 500 hockey. The Flames are a weird team. They have so much firepower and can put a lot of wins together, and then they get tied up in a lot of crazy crap You know, a little game I was watching the other day, Calgary and Pittsburgh, when the Tkachuk was just trying to get in everyone's face and Fleury. I wasn't the Pittsburgh. Excuse me, it was the Golden Knights, and Fleury and Nett was just having his way with him, which was pretty funny to see him Tkachuk getting antagonized instead of it flipping around the other way. But you know, it just shows you that there's how much tightness is throughout the league, and in the Pacific Division, it's really tight already. I mean, San Jose's 21 points in seventh place, and they're only 8 points out of first place, where Edmonton is with 29. So that's already tight. You're not even into December yet. So that division, who knows how it's going to play out when it's all said and done. It is nice to see Edmonton in first place. Connor McDavid's, you know, playing well again, as always, as you were saying. So that conference, that division, I should say, is kind of fun to just sit back and watch and see what happens, because there's a lot going on, but I think the teams are very, very close in that division. Regardless of where teams are seated right now, 1, 2, and 3, overall, they're a pretty tight knit, that whole division. Anybody can win at any time. I don't know if they're going to be a big runaway, as you can see with Boston or what the Caps are doing over in the East.
Right, I agree with that. My last one is as far as the AHL and the OHL as well. As far as the AHL, I was talking about it earlier because I know we're out of time, but I watched a little bit of the game on Saturday. The Rangers lost to the Wolfpack. They lost to the Senators AHL affiliate, the Belleville team. They lost in the shootout 4-3. Your old boy, Vinny Letary, man, had a nice goal, man. A nice one-timer in that game. They're actually up in that game, and they ended up losing it in the shootout. But, you know, I'll keep more eye on the AHL and more of the college hockey. We'll get into more of the NCAA hockey throughout this regular season with the NHL, and we'll compare notes and share here on the Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud. But as far as the OHL, man, I've been watching, and I even paid attention on that because you can watch those games on the internet as well. The 67s, the Oshawa team's on fire, and there's certain players in that circuit that we've kind of talked about it in NHL drafts as far as guys who are prospects, guys like Connor McMichael, a guy you've heard me say several times, and a guy who should be ready to go on somebody's squad as far as with the London Knights, man. He's on fire with 43 points, and of course Arthur Kaliev as well, who leads the league, that circuit with 44 points and goals as well, and power play goals as well. And the Ottawa 67s, and then as far as Cedric Andre, he's a very good goalie in that with the OHL teams, man. I don't know if you've been keeping up with the OHL, but I know I have a lot more to see once I start watching a little bit more of their games, just keeping on sprinkling them. I sprinkle those games in after we watch the Rangers win or lose as well. Staying up and try to catch up on the OHL. Any thoughts on the AHL or the OHL, RP?
And the OHL, no, I haven't really followed it. The AHL, you know, if you guys want to watch goaltending, Shesterkin is just giving them a show right now out there. I mean, Hoffman only has one loss on the season. Shesterkin just came off winning goalie of the month. He's putting a ton of pressure on the Rangers to make a decision on him. He transitioned from the KHL to the AHL pretty much flawlessly, Steve. He's just playing some great hockey. He's been the talk of the town. They've been the AHL all around. Been talking about how well he's been playing and so forth. It's some good hockey to watch, and he's just putting on a clinic right now. He really seems comfortable in that, and that goes back to when we first saw him in Traverse City way back in – well, not Traverse, the prospect camp in July. He looked like he scored a little bit. In Traverse City right before training camp, he looked good. He had a good Ranger training camp. Everybody knew he was going to Hartford because of the Gorgiev Lundqvist situation. And he went down there and just hit it head on. And I tell you, he's definitely going to force the Rangers' hand to make a move sooner than they probably wanted to. But he's playing that well right now. It's hard to ignore.
All right, final thoughts from you, RP, the Rink Podcast with Ranger Power. Any final thoughts as we head into these tough four games, man, coming up?
Tough four games. You're going to find out a lot about animosity with the Rangers in the next week and a half They're going to play a lot of hockey games. The kids are going to be under an enormous amount of pressure, stress, fatigue. So I'm interested to see how they come out of it. You know, the three games in four nights in Ottawa, at home against Ottawa, going to Montreal, coming back home for a Monday night game. There's going to be a lot of running around, a lot of travel. They play a lot of games in the next 10 days. So a couple of back-to-back sets. It's going to be interesting to see how these guys can hold up.
Right on, man. RP, it was great talking with you, man. We'll be back next Tuesday right before Turkey Day, man.
Absolutely.
Actually, we might be the only episode next Tuesday. I mean, next week, that Tuesday. We're going to have a short week, man, on the holiday week, man, here at the Bleed Blue Show, man. With the Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud, or RP on Facebook, Twitter, of course, writing for Elite Sports New York. Enjoy the episode, and let's get at least 4 6-points out of 8 next week, man, of this week coming up. And we'll talk about it next Tuesday before we eat turkey. Sangre also, ladies and gentlemen, Lee Blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleep bloop, 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 bleep bloop.